Welcome everybody, thanks for turning up to the last in this summer series of Digital Classics Work in Progress seminars. I'm particularly pleased that so many people have turned up, given that the Institute for Classical Studies library is actually being closed for a week, so we're technically outside of library time, so that's great. The Digital Classics seminars are sponsored by the Centre for Computing and the Humanities at King's College London and the Institute for Classical Studies here in the University of London, who provide the room and the snacks and drinks. The Digital Classicist, which organises and sponsors the seminars, is an organisation and a community, more than anything else, of good practice and collaboration in the study of the ancient world and collaboration with especially computer science techniques and cyber infrastructure and so forth. So that's been the focus of this seminar series. Just a reminder that we're recording the seminar for a podcast, which should appear online at the beginning of next week. So two things to bear in mind. One, that anything you say during the question session at the end of this will be recorded, so try not to say anything too controversial that you wouldn't like to have attached to your name. If anyone does anything really terrible, we can always remove it, but we'd rather not have to go to that trouble. And the second thing to bear in mind is that the microphones are at the two corners of the room, so if you're sat right by those corners, you don't need to speak particularly loudly when asking a question, but if you're sat very far away from them, then you may need to speak up a little to be picked up by the recording. Likewise, rustling of crisps and biscuits right next to the microphones will be more disruptive than elsewhere. Okay, so this week's seminar is presented by Peter Heslin, who teaches at Durham, and about 10 years ago came up with this this piece of software, Diogenes, which I remember hearing about at the time because I was working at the TLG then, and so it was particularly interesting to see a tool which, unlike most of the tools that were available at the time for reading the TLG and related disks, were either very expensive or didn't work very well. This was a tool that was neither of those things because it was free, and it did work well. And I remember in the fairly early days trying to install Diogenes on a Mac, which before then all of the Mac users I knew had been using Pandora, which has never worked very well in OS X, the later versions of the Mac operating system. And there was a certain amount of technical expertise required to get it working. I remember giving up after about 2 days. But it's now, in the more recent versions of this are great. They will install so easily, even on Mac and Linux and whatever else, that you can just give someone the URL. I pointed students toward this and said, just download Diogenes and use it, and they have. Even more impressively, I pointed professors to it, and they've also been able to do that. That's great. So Peter's going to talk to us today about the Diogenes tool, past development, and future plans.
Thanks. I was going to take a historical approach rather than telling you what the software does. You can just download it for free and try it out yourself. It's about 10 years old from the very, very, very beginnings. It's been about 10 years. And so I thought that I would look over how the tool evolved and rather than simply giving you a historical narrative, try to draw some morals from that, some things that I've learned that might be applicable to other humanities computing projects and the like, because at 10 years old, it is a fairly ancient piece of software, given the way things change in the world of computers. So I'll be talking about some nitty-gritty details, but I hope that the general principles and morals that I'm going to try to draw from it will be more generally applicable. So there's a timeline down the left-hand side there, which will run from 98 to the present, and then we'll finish up with some considerations about where Diogenes could usefully go in the future. So back in 1998, I was using Pandora to access the PHI Latin text and the TLG Greek text. I don't really do documentary stuff, so I never really had any need for the Duke documentary papyri and the inscriptions disk, but I did use literary texts. I've actually never ever tried anything else since then, so I don't know what those other expensive programs did because I didn't have the money to try them, but Pandora was always what was available in the universities I was at, and it was a pretty frustrating experience to use. I couldn't install it on my own computer because at that stage I was using Linux and it wouldn't work there. When you wanted to do a search, usually meant going off, you know, making a cup of coffee, maybe even having a sandwich and coming back and finding the answer. And it also meant that you had to find the CD, which, you know, usually the one you want wasn't there. So you'd have to go from the library to the computer room, wait for the one computer that had Pandora installed, find the CD, put it in, have enough time to run the search. And it meant that you didn't do searches very often. So I could never find the disk. It was too slow and it didn't work on Linux. And so I kept thinking, God, there's got to be a better way of doing this. And so what I did was I took the disks home, which, you know, probably not supposed to do, but I did it anyway because I was so frustrated one day after spending the whole day trying to do a search. Took them home, used the Unix utility grep, which is a simple text searching program, and I got the answer I wanted not after 15 minutes, but after about 15 seconds. And I thought, there's no intrinsic reason why this needs to be so slow. It helped that I'm a Latinist, so I was searching Latin text, so there was no confusion about this weird encoding of the Greek that you couldn't really read. It also helped that I work on poetry, and poetry has a pretty straightforward citation scheme. There's usually something that says book 3, and then you just count the lines thereafter, and that's a citation. There's no chapters, and most importantly of all, when we come to searching, there's no hyphenation in poetic texts. So I got started using texts that you could actually profitably manipulate without any specialized software. So for a while, actually for this whole year, when I was writing up my PhD, I was doing an awful lot of searching of the Latin text, of Latin poetic text, using a tool that was never meant to do anything other than search English texts. What I discovered over the course of that year, occasionally I needed Pandora because it was a prose text or a Greek text, and I didn't really know how to deal with those, is that Pandora has some bugs in it. For example, having discovered that hyphenation was a real problem, how do you search for a word given that the texts are represented on those databases in hyphenated form, you've got to do a bit of trickery to join the two bits of the words together on the fly while you're searching. And in fact, I discovered that Pandora doesn't catch all hyphenated words. And I started wondering, why is it that people are always saying, in published work, I'm telling you that there are only two examples of this word in Greek literature. They don't tell you what program they used to search. They don't tell you that they double-checked it by using two different search programs. They just present this as a result without telling you how they got that result. Well, given that it's not straightforward, some of these questions to ask of the databases, surely you need to double-check. You need to document your sources, how you arrived at those conclusions. And I started to think that maybe it might be useful to write a program that one could use to double-check Pandora's results. And I thought, well, if I write a better tool, everyone will flock to it. And that's the first moral to draw, which is that everyone didn't flock to it. Well, for one thing, it was very hard to install. It was actually always easy to install on Linux, which is what I used, but not a lot of classicists were using that. And they're also pretty conservative. So it's taken about 10 years for Diogenes to build up a large constituency. And there are thousands of people using it now. So if you stick around for 10 years, eventually even classicists will come around and start using your tool. Another moral to take away is that we all know this, but visual markup as opposed to semantic markup is truly evil. The whole source of the problem with hyphenation is that these texts were represented exactly as they appeared visually on the page. If a page ended with half a word and a hyphen, that's how it was represented in the databases. That is not how you should record them for a computer. You should record the meaning of the text rather than their visual appearance on the page. This was presumably originally done to keep proofreading costs down. So you could have people who didn't know anything about Latin or Greek comparing the printed text to the computer's output, and that makes it easy going in, but it makes it a lot more difficult to make use of those texts on the other end. So the first steps then were just this Unix tool called grep, which is a search tool, and a few bits of programming around it. So I created a little script that would show you a few lines of context of the word you were searching for, would tell you the author. And this worked for poetry. There's a little Perl language, computer language, that I used. And as I say, for about a year, it worked fine for me. Eventually got to the point where it could give you, if you guess at the line numbers, because poetry is so simple and straightforward, it would just run through the text and count the number of lines rather than using the built-in citation information. but usually within two or three lines it was accurate. You couldn't rely on it, you know, if you're going to put this in your PhD dissertation, and as I was doing, say this is on line such and such, you'd actually have to go to the printed text and check it out. But for searching, it worked really well, and what I discovered is that you can, if a search takes a couple of seconds rather than all day, as it was taking me, you can ask a lot more different types of questions. You can ask questions, let's just find out the random question, and do it right at your fingertips, and then you start discovering interesting things about words and about usage that you wouldn't have discovered otherwise, unless you're lucky enough to have something like the TLL on your shelf, which as a poor graduate student I certainly didn't have. I added a rudimentary browser so that you could, if you had a citation, you wanted to look at that citation, you could spot it. Again, this only really worked for poetry at that stage. And then I started adding Greek output. This is before Unicode, before anyone was really using Unicode. So it used this really peculiar encoding, which I was using for my PhD dissertation. It was a font called Ibicus for the LaTeX typesetting system. But I started to realize the limitations here and to started to wonder, what was this citation info that was embedded in the text? In other words, for prose texts and for all texts, there were these bits of information saying, this is book 2, chapter 5, line 3. But it was all in binary format. It wasn't something like XML where you could look at the text and say, oh, well, this says line equals